"You'll be all right," Tonino said. "He needs a few hours of meditation. There's nothing really wrong with him."
"Except that someone tried to kill him," Orlando said.
"Yes," Tonino said, "it looks that way."
"He did not succeed," Fletch announced from the bed.
"No," Tonino said, "he did not succeed." Softly, Tito said, "He almost succeeded."
The room was black. Fletch did not remember their leaving.
Through the dark night, he listened to the samba drums. The sound was not coming from the street. It was coming from various televisions throughout the hotel, around the neighborhood. An announcer's voice came and went over the sound of the drumming and singing. Rio de Janeiro's samba school parade was continuing. He did not sleep. Some unconsciousness other than sleep came and went like a presence in the dark room. It came closer and went away. He did not move. No part of his body wanted to move. Every muscle in his body had been kicked at least once. The skin and tissue against his bones throbbed. For a while, the thighs of his legs would hurt. He would think about them, then his shoulders. And he would think about them, his back, the area high in his stomach, just below his ribs. Even his fingers and toes hurt. Anything was better than thinking how his head hurt. His head felt as if the inside had been kicked loose from the outside and rattled. Lara would return, sometime during the morning, or perhaps within an hour after the parade was over, by 2 or 3 in the afternoon. How could she know at the parade he had been kicked almost to death? All she knew was that he had left the box to take a walk with the tap dancers. She would return. Daylight came through the balcony drapes. Then direct sunlight entered the room. The television coverage of the carnival parade continued. The room grew hot. In his bed, he experimented moving an arm, then the other, one leg. He dug his fingers into his left leg to cause it to move. Slowly, he rolled his head back and forth on the pillow. His head was clearing. He had not been unconscious for a long time now. It was nearly noon when he could resist no longer. Slowly, he rolled himself to the edge of the bed. Heavily, he lifted himself up. The semi-dark room went out of focus for a minute. He took a step forward. There was no part of his body which did not hurt. After using the toilet, he turned on the bathroom light and looked at himself in the mirror. To his regret, his head was on frontwards and stared back at him. Swollen eyes, bruised cheekbones, jaws. One ear was inflamed. There was still blood in his hair. A shower would cause his bandages to fall off. Backing up, he saw the blue bruises on his upper arms, his chest. The top of his stomach was purple. Brushing his teeth gingerly, he spat blood into the basin. Then he returned to bed and waited. Lara would come and they would have food. He would tell her what had happened to him. Would she listen? What had happened to him? Would she be interested, or would this be a level of reality which didn't interest her much? While he talked, would she be hearing something else? As he was leaving the box to join the tap dancers, her face had been inscrutable. What did the fact of the wooden-legged boy following them through the subway mean to her it did not mean to him? Lara had not returned by the time Tonino called.
"You must be better," Tonino said. "You've had almost 12 hours to meditate."
"I need 12 years.
"Who tried to kill you?"
"I'm thinking about that."
"Ah, carnival," Tonino said.
"He was wearing a goat mask," Fletch said. "A man in his 60s, I'd say. He tried to kick me to death."
"He must have slipped into the personality of the goat. Carnival does that."
"No goat has such training in capoeira." Fletch wanted to switch the phone to his other ear. Then he remembered his other ear had slipped into the personality of a tomato.
"The news is that Norivales showed up."
"Great, in one piece?"
"Yes, he came ashore way down the coast, 100 kilometers south of where we thought. I always thought that boy would go a long way. Apparently he got caught in a current, which took him south and ashore. He was on the beach this morning. A jogger found him. They are bringing his body up now."
"Good, great, all your worries are over."
"The report so far is that he drowned. His boat broke up and he drowned."
"That's good. So Norival did die at sea. His mother will be so glad. Admiral Passerino will be ecstatic."
"So we'll see you at the funeral home in about 30 minutes.
"What? No way. Tonino, I can't move."
"Of course you can move.
Why should I go to the funeral home?"
"To help us distract the officials."
Tonino's voice fell to the conspiratorial.
"To distract them from any idea of an autopsy. We need to stand around in a circle and say, yes, he drowned. We saw him go sailing, and indeed, he certainly did drown. They're more apt to believe you, you see. They don't know you as well as they know us. I don't think I can move. You must move. If you don't make yourself move now, you'll stiffen up like Norival and not be able to move for days.
Fletch hesitated. He remembered past injuries. You're probably right. Still, he had had no real sleep.
Of course I'm right. The funeral home of Joe Pereira on Rue Jardin Botanico, the business part of the road.
I'll find it.
I'll bring all your gambling winnings to you.
You needn't bribe me. Fletch tried sitting up in bed. On the other hand, maybe you do. Chapter 31.
At the funeral home of Job Pereira, Fletch tried to find a doorbell to ring, a door on which to knock. There was neither. It was a large stucco and stone house sitting in the deep shade of its own trees.
Hello, he called. Anyone?
The quiet from inside the building was tomb-like. He stepped into the coolness of the foyer. There was no reception desk, still no bell to ring. There were short, dark potted palms in each corner.
Hello, Fletch called.
The only response was a faint echo of his own voice. It had taken him longer than the promised half hour to get from the Hotel Yellow Parrot to the funeral home of Joe Pereira. Sitting on the edge of his bed, he had ordered food from room service. While still at the telephone, he called the Hotel Jangada and asked for room 912. No answer. No, Mrs. Joan Collins Stanwyck had not yet picked up the envelope Mr. Fletcher had left in her box. Every step, every movement, however small, caused him pain. He opened the drapes to the balcony. Across the utility area, the man was painting the room. Perhaps the man's permanent job in life was to paint that room. Fletch opened the door to the balcony. The air was warm and dry and felt good. The televisions were still blaring the news of Carnival Parade. Life goes on. Shaving was like walking barefoot through a field of glass. Finished, he had to affix one more bandage to his face. Alone, with stinging lips and sore jaws, he ate breakfast. Every minute he thought Laura might return. Finally dressed in a pair of clean shorts and a t-shirt, sneakers, and socks, he went down in the elevator. The desk clerk and the few other people in the lobby glanced at him and immediately looked away. Despite the glue stuck to various parts of his face and body, he gathered he no longer looked like a Christmas package. The avenida in front of the hotel was emptier than he had ever seen it. Citizens either were still watching Carnival Parade or were worn out by it and sleeping. Finally, a taxi picked him up. All the streets were empty. All the way to the funeral home, the taxi radio kept up an excited description of the last escola to parade. Hello? Anyone here? The funeral home was lifeless. There was not even the sound of a radio or television reporting the parade. Fletch limped into a big room to the left of the foyer. Heavy-waisted velvet drapes on the windows cut down the light in the room. Several open coffins were on display in the room. Each was on its own fancy trestle. He looked in one. It was empty. A coffin salesroom. He moved from coffin to coffin, looking in each. The coffins ranged from polished pine to brass-studded mahogany. He heard a sound behind him. A seemingly tired, lazy voice said, "Hello?" Fletch turned around. In the door to the room, white as sea foam, the brighter light from the foyer behind him softening his outline, clearly stood Norival. Norival Passerino. Dressed in white shoes, white slacks, white shirt. His belly hung over his belt. Damp hair fell onto his forehead. His face was puffy.
Norival Passerino.
Fletch blinked. Norival blinked. Fletch sucked in cool air from the coffin display room.
Ah, Gianni Barreto.
Norival shambled toward Fletch. Norival even put out his arm to take Fletch's hand.
At last I get to meet you properly.
The room rose. Fletch fell. Chapter 32. Fletch knew he was in a small, dark place. Becoming conscious, he could hear no natural sounds except the sound of his own breathing. The air was stale. He was lying on his back. His head was on some kind of pillow. Only when he moved his right hand and immediately came to the edge of the space, a soft wall, did he realize how small the space was. The same was true when he moved his left hand. The space he was in, clearly, was no wider than a long, narrow bed. He ran his hands up the satiny walls. The ceiling of the space was immediately on top of him, only a few centimeters above his chest, his chin, his nose.
A very small space indeed. His fingers brushed against something else. Paper, fairly stiff paper. Both hands felt over the object lying beside him in the small space. His fingers told him it was a paper bag with papers in it. Fletch tried to think where he had last been, what had happened to him, at what he had been looking when... Coffins!
Yeah.
Fletcher's roar surprised and deafened himself.
I'm not dead.
In that terrible enclosure, he tried to get his hands up, to press up, raise the lid of the coffin. His heart was pounding in a lively manner. His face poured sweat.
Hey out there!
Horrified, he realized he might be trying to yell through 6 feet of sod.
Hey up there! I'm not dead yet, I swear to it.
He could not get his arms, hands at the right angle to lift. The coffin lid was heavy. His beaten muscles quivered and ached, but accomplished little.
Ah! Somebody, anybody, listen, I'm not dead yet.
The air in the coffin had become exceedingly warm.
Socorro, damn it!
By itself, it seemed, the coffin lid rose. Instantly, the air became fresh and sweet. He blinked stupidly at the light of day. Laura's head was over the coffin, looking in.
Ah, there you are, she said.
Lying flat, sucking in the good air, Fletch said nothing.
What are you doing in a coffin?
Fletch panted.
You do look like you belong in a coffin.
I saw Norival, he said. Norival Passerino.
Norival's dead, she said.
I know.
Apparently he went sailing alone at night. His boat hit a rock or something. He drowned.
I know.
His body washed up this morning. Very sad. Poor Norival.
I know all that, Laura, but listen. I came here to the funeral home. Tonino asked me to. I was alone in this room.
Fletch peered over the edge of his coffin and established that he was still in the coffin display room.
And I turned around, and there in the door stood Norival. Norival Passerino, blinking.
Norival?
He spoke to me. He said, Gianio Barreto. He came forward. He walked across the room at me. He tried to shake my hand.
Laura wrinkled up her nose.
Norival Passerino?
Yes, definitely.
After he was dead?
Yes, I know he was dead.
It couldn't have been Norival Passerino.
It was Norival Passerino, dressed in white, all in white.
You saw Norival Passerino walking around after he was dead?
He said, Norival said, Ah, Gianio Barreto.
Fletch lowered his voice to the sepulchral.
At last I get to meet you properly.
You saw Adroaldo Passerino.
What? Who?
Adroaldo, Norival's brother. They're just alike.
Fletch thought a moment. Adroaldo?
Yes. Adroaldo was very surprised when he put out his arm to shake hands with you and you fainted.
I fainted?
Well, you fell on the floor without apparent, what do you call it, premeditation. Adroaldo Passerino? You didn't know Norival had a brother?
Yes, of course, but he was so white.
He's been in school in Switzerland all winter.
Laura,
Fletch, I think you're not surviving Carnival. It's beginning to affect your mind.
What am I doing in a coffin?
Laura shrugged.
I suspect the tap dancers put you in there after you fainted.
Why?
One of their little tricks.
She giggled.
Very funny.
Stiffly, he began to pull himself up to sit up in his coffin.
God, I thought, it is funny.
He picked up the paper bag and looked into it.
What's that? She asked. Your lunch? Enough to tide you over to the other world?
My poker winnings.
Ah, they buried you with all your worldly wealth, all your ill-gotten gains, so you can tip Charon after he rows you across the River Styx.
His time in the coffin had stiffened his muscles again.
How come you're here?
Tonino called me at the hotel. Said you had fainted. I should come in the car and pick you up.
Adroaldo and the others had to go with Norival in his coffin to the Passerino home. Fletch's heart had slowed, but he was still sweating.
What if you hadn't come? I could have run out of air.
Why wouldn't I have come?
Well, supposing the car had broken down or...
You could have gotten yourself out of there.
I could have died of cardiac arrest.
Were you that frightened?
Waking up in a closed coffin is not something one expects to do under any circumstances.
She was studying his face.
You're a mess.
I got nearly kicked to death.
They told me. Your whole body like that?
At the moment, I'm not very sleek.
Was there any reason for it you know of? I mean, getting attacked?
I think so, yes. Help me out of this damned coffin, if you don't mind.
Also, there was another message for you at the hotel.
She balanced him by holding onto his hand.
A Sergeant Paulo Barbosa of Rio de Janeiro Police would like you to call him.
What did he say?
Just left a message. How much trouble are you in?
Oh, my God. A body wounded in every part is painful to lift out of a raised coffin and set on 2 feet on the floor.
You really are a mess, Laura said. The car is just outside.
You'd better drive.
Seeing the last vehicle you tried to drive is a coffin.
Not by choice, thank you.
We'll go back to the hotel. The parade is over. It was really wonderful. You missed most of it.
I'm sorry about that.
Fletch, you always seem to be someplace you're not supposed to be, doing something you're not supposed to be doing.
Got any other news for me?
Yes.
They were crossing the wide, cool foyer of the funeral home of Job Pereira, heading for the dazzling sunlight beyond the front door.
Paul Bocuse is the chef at Le Saint-Honoré. I've made reservations for tonight in your name. Have you forgotten the ball at Regine's? That's tonight. Tomorrow I thought we'd drive up and have a quiet lunch at Floresta.
You mean carnival still isn't over?
Tomorrow night it's over. I'm not at all sure you'll make it. I'll have to start preparing for my concert tour soon enough. Not a worry. We'll go back to the hotel and rest now.
No.
No? You want to go play soccer now?
I want to go to Favela Santos Lima now.
Over the top of the small yellow convertible, she gave him a long look.
I'll never rest until I do. You said so yourself.
I don't think I know the way.
I do. He lowered himself gently onto the hot passenger seat. Just follow my directions.
Chapter 33.
Sore with wounds, dazed with sleeplessness, Fletch walked into Favela Santos Lima like a figura de destaque. The sun was searingly, blindingly hot. Laura traipsed along a few steps behind him. The children of the favela followed him too, of course, but they walked at a distance from him, quietly. As they climbed the hill, adults from the little houses and the little shops followed them. By the time they were in front of Vitalina Barreto's house, they were a large crowd. The tall old woman recognized Laura immediately. Hands on her hips in the doorway of her little house, she began talking to Laura even before Laura got to the front of the house. The old woman asked, repeated, some question of Laura. The crowd outside the house was quiet. They wanted to hear Fletcher's answer. Laura said,
"She wants to know if you've come to identify your murderer."
Fletch said, "I think so. Tell her I think so." Laura frowned.
"Are you serious?"
"Is anything serious?"
"How do you mean to do that?"
"I mean to walk slowly through the favela, look into everyone's eyes. I shall identify my murderer."
"Just like that?"
"Just like that."
"I don't believe..."
She looked around at all the people quietly awaiting Fletcher's response.
"Why don't you believe?"
he asked.
"What do you believe?"
Fletch waited a long time for her to answer. He asked, "Would you like to believe I'm about to perform magic? That I'm about to do a trick?" Still, Laura did not answer. "Would you like to believe, as some of these people do, that I am Janio Barreto, returned from the dead after 47 years to point out my murderer?"
"I believe..."
In the heat of the sunlight, Laura took a deep breath.
"I don't believe you should play with these people."
"Am I playing?"
"At least some of these people believe this story. Because the old lady wants them to believe. The others are just curious. They love any story.
Anyone can make up a story and say it is the past, right?"
"Identifying someone as your murderer, as the murderer of Janio Barreto, would be a very serious thing for these people."
"I hope so."
"You have no idea what they might do to such a person."
"I can guess."
"Fletch, you must tell me what you know."
"You want a fact?"
"I want something."
"Okay, Laura, here's a fact. The person who murdered Janio Barreto 47 years ago truly believes I am Janio Barreto returned."
"How do you know that?"
"Look at me."
"I don't think you should play with the... what's the word? Credibility of the people."
"I'm taking advantage of the credulity of only one of these people."
"Someone believes..."
"Someone either believes I am Janio Barreto returned, or he has decided to act as if he believes I am Gianni Barreto returned, just in case it is true. In the sunlight, Laura sighed. Now there were even more people standing around outside Idolino Barreto's house, awaiting his answer. The child Gianni Barreto had appeared. Of all the people in the favela, he stood closest to Fletch. "Please tell the old woman I'm here to identify my murderer." Laura started to speak to Idolina, but then stopped. Instead, she said to Fletch, "You're putting it to me too, aren't you?" "Hell, Laura, we haven't even gotten to know each other." "All this will be on your head," she said. "Fine, my head is so sore now it doesn't matter." Speaking loudly, as if making an announcement, Laura answered the old woman. The crowd cheered. Many gave the thumbs-up sign. The old woman asked another question. Laura said, "Do you really mean to just walk through the favela up and down the streets until you point someone out?" "I want to see, to look into the eyes of everyone in the favela. Tell her if the murderer is here, I will find him." Laura translated in a less robust voice. Idolina Barreto came out of the shade of her doorway. In the sunlight, she took Fletch's arm. Together, Laura walking behind them, the people from the favela all around them, Fletch and Idolina Barreto began to walk through Favela Santos Lima. "I know your trick," Laura finally said to Fletch in a low voice. They'd been walking a long time. Her hair had collapsed with perspiration. "You're going to walk through the whole favela and point no one out." "Maybe," Fletch answered. "Would that permit me to sleep?" Favela Santos Lima was far more extensive than he thought. It was a senseless warren of streets and alleys and footpaths. The banged-together, stuck-together hovels seemed placed by the whimsy of the moment or some invisible convenience. On some of the paths, only he and Idolina could walk abreast. The stream of their followers flowed a kilometer behind them in some places. "We're having our own carnival parade," Fletch said to Laura. "Not bloody likely." Sweating, the middle-aged Gianni Barreto Filo appeared and asked what was happening. His mother told him Gianni Barreto wished to look into the eyes of everyone in the favela. He would identify his murderer. Gianni Barreto Filo organized boys and men to walk ahead of Fletch and Idolina and get all the people out of their homes so Fletch could look into their eyes as he passed. It was the afternoon after the Samba School parade, and most of the people in the favela were sleeping. Barreto's squad called through the windows of their homes, entered, awakened people, and politely asked them to come outside. "No, no, it is not the police. It is an important matter. To solve an ancient matter having to do with the favela. We are about to find out who murdered Gianni Barreto a long time ago." Shy of most clothes, faces puffy with tiredness, the people stood at their doors rubbing their eyes in the sunlight. Perhaps they understood a feat of legerdemain was about to happen. A voice from beyond the grave was about to speak. Perhaps they understood nothing but that someone had asked them to wake up and stand outside a moment. Something interesting was passing by. Sleepy or curious, they cooperated. Fletch asked Laura, "Are you deciding what you believe now?"
"All these people."
Laura looked back at the river of people following them.
"Many of them are laughing at you."
"I would hope so," he said.
"Turning this into a joke, is that what you're doing?"
"Isn't it a joke?"
"You're going to lead them around in a circle and then say there is no such person as your murderer here."
"Perhaps." As he walked, Fletch was becoming less stiff. He was thirsty. The sun was stinging his various wounds on his face and arms. His head throbbed like a samba combo. A few times, the bright sunlight dimmed on him unnaturally. He stumbled. Idolina Barreto's grip on his arm was strong. Of course, he did not know if he was going up and down every path in Santos Lima. He had to leave that to his guides. It certainly felt as though he was going up and down every path, looking into the eyes of every person in Santos Lima.
"I'm going back," Laura said. "Here are the car keys. I'll take a taxi."
"No," said Fletch. "Stay with me."
"I don't care to see out the end of this act of yours."
"It's not an act." Fletch was seeing the people of Favela Santos Lima. He was seeing males and females, the old, the young, the tall, the short, the beautiful, the ugly, the misshapen, the healthy, the insane, the doddering, the dignified, the ashamed. Ahead of him on a narrow path, he saw a lean, gray-haired man dressed only in shorts leave a house. He crossed the path and entered another house. Walking more quickly, Fletch approached that house. In excitement, Idelina Barreto gripped his arm even tighter. She kept up with him. Young Janio Barreto looked up into Fletch's eyes. Then, calling others, he ran ahead and into the house. Fletch entered the house. It was empty. There was a doorless back door. From behind the house came the sound of young Janio Barreto calling loudly. As Fletch went through the house, the mob following gathered speed. They went through the house and round the house. Now they had the idea they were pursuing someone.
"What are you doing?" Laura said. "Madman!"
Fletch looked back. A wall of the little house they had just gone through fell flat in the dust. The other three walls fell forward but did not collapse. The twisted tin roof kept three of the walls up.
"You are out of your mind," Laura said. "There is no understanding this."
Above the little house, he came to a wider path. To his left down the path, young Janio Barreto held onto the black shorts of the gray-haired man he knew Fletch was pursuing. Other boys, men, surrounded the man. More slowly now, Fletch walked toward the group in the middle of the path. As he approached, one of the young men said to the gray-haired man,
"Just let him look into your eyes, Gabriel."
"Gabriel Campos!"
Idelina Barreto shrieked in her highest crone's voice.
"Gabriel Campos!"
Clearly the man wanted to bolt. He was surrounded now by 20 strong young men, by more than 30 children. He was being approached by more than 100 fellow citizens of his favela. With dignity, he stood his ground. His body was mostly light, sinewy muscle. The top of his stomach was pumping hard. The man had not moved that far, not moved that fast to be so out of breath, not for a man in his condition. A disingenuous smile played on his lips.
"Gabriel Campos!"
Idelina shrieked. Then she shouted something about Janio Barreto. Standing close to him, Fletch looked into the eyes of Gabriel Campos. He had seen those eyes before. Gabriel Campos' eyes flickered. He looked at the crowd and back at Fletch. His smile came and went like a flashing light. Slowly, Fletch raised his hand. He pointed his index finger at Gabriel Campos' nose. Fletch already had checked the ring the man was wearing. It had a black center. Intertwined snakes rose from that center. Instantly, Gabriel Campos ducked. Throwing back his elbows, he darted backward through the circle of young men, children, knocking over a child. Idelina Barreto shrieked. Others began to yell, move forward. Two of the young men grabbed for Gabriel Campos. Campos kicked one in the stomach, the other in the face. It seemed everyone was trying to lay a hand on Campos. With tremendous skill, ducking and dancing, he kicked free of the crowd. He turned and ran up the path. Shouting, young men ran after him. Tripping over each other, almost all the men and children who had been following Fletch joined the pursuit. Yelling, some lifting their skirts up, many of the women pursued Gabriel Campos as well. Shrieking,
"Gabriel Campos! Gabriel Campos!"
Tall old Idelina Barreto went after him in her rapid, sturdy pace, losing ground in the midst of this marathon. Fletch sat on a nearby rock.
"Dor de estomago, de cabeca, febre, nausea."
A few meters away, Laura Suarez was in a group of women from the favela. They were all talking at once. Most of them were pregnant and therefore could not join in the pursuit of Gabriel Campos. Laura was asking questions. She kept looking across at Fletch.